This is an Adventures on Board podcast. I'm Kerry.
And I'm Carol.
Welcome on board our 35-foot sailing boat as we traverse our way around the United Kingdom on our circumnavigation. Well, that's the plan anyway. It all started back in June this year, and we seem to have ended up, well, almost in Scotland, which for us, I think, is not bad going at all. But our plans actually started a long time ago, didn't they?
They did, yes.
3 years? 4 years? How long ago did we buy the boat?
4 years.
4 years ago we bought Wakonda. And she is a beautiful, beautiful boat that we managed to decant everything into. And that we are now living our life on the water. And during this time, we've had lots of questions asked from different people. And we thought today we'd try and answer some of them. So off we go.
Good. So thank you for the questions that you sent. They're really interesting, really made us think. We've not really spent any time looking at them, preparing answers. We genuinely haven't, because we wanted to answer you just honestly, frankly, as the answers came to us. So the first one came through from Karen, and she asked, how do you get on with doing your clothes washing and drying?
Well, you have to wash them.
Oh. Yeah, we have washed them since June, Kerry, yes. That's why everybody stays away from us. So, well, what we do, when we are in marinas, most marinas have washing facilities with washing machines and tumble dryers, and they're usually quite good value. So we use those. Sometimes, not very often, but sometimes we will go and get a service wash done, especially with bedding and things like that. But when we are down a river or anchored somewhere, what we do is, yeah, glamorous lifestyle, here it comes, we put a bucket on the back of the boat, put some water in it, and we put sort of small items of clothing in there overnight, wash it out the next day, and hang it off the side of the boat. So like old-fashioned wash days of many years ago, we wait and see for a nice sunny windy day and hang them on the side of the boat.
You can always tell when people have been on a boat for a while and they're doing their washing, because, well, instead of having sails flapping around in the air, they've got their smalls hanging around. And I'll tell you what dries the clothes out really well is if you do what my wife does, which is actually hang them out on the back of the boat as we're going along. This seems to help no end with the drying process. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a very eco drying system. So Karen also asked us another question, and she asked, when we start our new adventure, so it, like in the spring, do we have to wait for spring tides?
Thanks, Karen. Great question. We're not actually waiting for spring tides. Obviously, we're waiting for the spring and for the slightly better settled weather, hopefully, that will come through. Although Karen and I have been out sailing before, actually in February, and it's been absolutely lovely. A little parky at times, to be fair. But what we're waiting for is just a general improvement in the weather itself. Spring tides and neap tides, depending on the phases of the moon, does affect the passage of water. So the speed of the water through port depends on the phases of the tide. So we're not actually waiting for spring tides, we're just going to wait for spring.
Before I ever went sailing, I had no idea about spring tides and neap tides. And for anybody that's listening that is interested, this is a really incredibly basic way of explaining, but I think it's quite a nice way of explaining. When you have a full moon, there's a stronger gravitational pull, which makes the sea move more quickly and rise and fall more. When the moon is only half, they're neap tides, and that means the water isn't moving so quickly, and there isn't such a rise and fall. And these things make a difference to us for getting into different places. We have to look to see what water's underneath us.
Faster the way the water's moving on a spring tide can actually help you. So you can actually harness that speed of water with the boat to get over the ground quicker.
So thank you, Karen. Great questions.
Yeah, good one. Thank you.
And you started the ball rolling with the questions too. Then Marcia asked some questions as well. I'm being told off for tinking my hand against my mug because my rings are going. Listen, right, and Kerry is such a professional with his podcast. Let me put my coffee down. Right. Okay. So Marcia asked, do you have an internal rocking motion if you're back on land for a few days? Kerry?
I don't, do you?
No, I don't actually.
No.
I don't know if we're lucky that we don't. I don't know how many people do. I think I've only ever experienced that once many years ago after we'd been on holiday and we were on the boat for a couple of weeks and I was working at college and walking down the corridors. It felt all swimmy where my body wasn't sort of balancing back again.
Yeah. Only happens to me occasionally when I walk out of the pub. Is that connected with the sea at all?
No.
Carrie, okay. No. But it's an interesting point you make about swaying motions and about seasickness, that actually people are scared about sometimes about getting onto a boat and worrying about seasickness. And there's all sorts of different proprietary things that will actually help you. Carol, you're using a watch at the moment to call it that, aren't you?
Yeah, I call it a watch, but it's actually called a relief band. And it works on the same system as TENS, a TENS machine. A lot of pregnant ladies are offered TENS machines. And to be honest, rather than me taking ages to explain exactly how they work, it just works on your balance. But I found it to be just amazing. Because I do suffer with seasickness sometimes, but when I do, it makes me feel very, very anxious, and then my anxiety levels go up, and then I find that difficult to come back from. I read this article once, which I found fascinating, and it just basically says, when you're on a boat, because of the motion, your eyes are seeing one thing and your brain's telling you another, because our feet should be on solid ground, we shouldn't be moving like that. So we think we've been poisoned. We think we have toxins in our system. And that's why our body then tries to make us feel sick, because it wants us to be sick to then get rid of the toxins. So really, really interesting.
Yeah. And as you say, bottom line is it works.
Yeah.
Happy days. Fantastic.
And things like ginger is really good, and looking at the horizon, steering's really good.
We often found ourselves singing. And we did a lot of singing. Luckily, not too many people are close by. We did a lot of singing on our big voyages of 10, 12 hours this summer. And apart from the fact it's great fun, equally so, it's actually quite a good way of releasing the endorphins, is it? Mm. And getting your head into a better place.
Makes you breathe properly, doesn't it? But Marcio, just a great question, honestly. And we do try incredibly hard when somebody's on board that hasn't been sailing before or has only done a little. We really do try to help and support as much as we can if they're feeling a little bit sort of woozily headed.
That's a nice... Is that a technical description?
It is, yes.
Is that medical?
Yeah, it's a nautical term. Woozily headed.
It is. We're going to just take a small break now to give you a little insight into the world of sailing and some nautical terms that you could do with learning. So there's things like a marlin spike. And the marlin spike is very useful for removing... Is that stones out of horses' hooves? Oh, no, for undoing knots. That's another one. But we've also got another one that we come across from time to time, haven't we, Carol?
Oh, my goodness me. So... Actually, I just quickly tell you this. So we were on holiday once, and sadly there was a guy who had been there before everyone else. It was more expensive than everybody else, so a real been there.
Oh, he'd been to 11 a Reef, hadn't he?
Yeah, not 10 a Reef.
He'd been to 11 a Reef.
And so the lead skipper of this sailing holiday was really getting a bit tedious with about this chap, and so he said to him, "Oh, you're really good at all these nautical terms, and I wondered if you could help me out. Could you tell me what a spur lash is?" So this guy was like, "Oh yes, well it's probably one of the knots that one would use in the cockpit. You lash something down with it, something like that, I would imagine." To which the lead skipper looked up and said, no, a spur lash is the sound an anchor makes when it falls in the sea." The guy kind of stopped from then on being quite such a know-all. It was divine retribution.
Still makes me giggle.
So Marcia had another question.
Thank you. Oh, right. Okay. How do you keep on top of boat maintenance? And are you doing a constant checking over of everything? Good question, Marcia. Again, it's one of those things that we have a list. Now, most people have a list of things they're going to do for shopping, and you work your way through it and it stops because you reach the end of the list. Then you buy a boat and you discover that the list becomes kind of like perpetual motion. It never actually ever ends. There's always something to add to it, whether it be repairing a slightly leaky gasket on the hatch, whether it be doing a full maintenance on the engine, whether it be checking over the impeller, which records the speed of the boat through the water. There's always something. And we try not to break things because that's not really a good thing on a boat. But again, fair wear and tear does happen. You do get bits and pieces. But this winter, we had quite an extensive programme of maintenance. Carol always enjoys when we have the boat out of the water, of getting underneath the boat and actually scraping off the barnacles and putting on anti-foul, don't you, darling?
Well, yeah, it's because I'm short enough that I fit under the boat to actually do it.
Every cloud has a silver lining. Well, a lot of the jobs we do, we try and do together, don't we?
Yeah, it's good to learn. And the more work, the more maintenance you do on your boat, you get to know it better. And I guess that's the same as a house on land. The more work you do to that, you get to know it better and sort of its little quirks. Really, because our boat is our home, as well as the maintenance side of what makes the boat a sailboat, there's also the maintenance of then what makes it our home. So just things like, we have a lot of wood below decks and we sort of wax that quite frequently, and sort of other things like that. Where we live on board, we need to look after her, she looks after us. And by keeping up, as Kerry was saying, by keeping up with everything, you don't then all of a sudden have loads of things to do all at once. So if anybody had a specific question about maintenance or things that we have to do, obviously do, you know, put that separately and we'll perhaps do it in another Q&A session.
Yeah, we could do quite a big one on that. A couple of things we've done this winter. Some of you have seen photographs of Carol putting up some, I say soundproofing, but material on the back end of the aft cabin. The stateroom, as I like to call it, which is very useful for keeping the room better, if you like, warmer. But there's lots of other things we do. So yeah, as Carol said, if you've got any other questions about maintenance, let us know what you'd like to know.
I love that you call it a stateroom. Here's the facts, guys. Okay, so a lot of people do in fact have like a cabin. You can't really call our bedroom a cabin.
Call it a bedroom.
Not really. We're very lucky. The bed we've got is huge, genuinely. It's like 7 foot long by 5 foot wide. But our cabin consists of a bed and a cupboard and a little space to shut the door. That's about it.
Oh, don't forget your extensive extra bit on your wardrobe for all the extras.
What, you mean the IKEA hanging pouch?
Yes.
Anyway, another question from Marcia. I really particularly like this one because it's something that I've not really thought about before. And it says, what do you do if you want some time to yourself to rest and relax, but the other is working or feeling unwell and using the communal space when it's too cold outside for that to be an option? It's quite a sort of a serious
question.
And I think we'll answer that as such.
Yeah, I mean, as you say quite rightly, Marcia, in the summer it's slightly easier to just troll off and go off and sort of sit on the bow or the stern and just sort of sit there and read a book, which we do from time to time. But we do a lot of walking and we always try and take in as many of the sights of the area. I think it's important when you go into, a bit like when you're on holiday, except we're not on holiday, when you're going in somewhere for the first time, going off and finding different places to go and see and find. And if we're doing something for ourselves, then we can make space. Carol said recently in that interview on Wiltshire Sound that you need somewhere to slam the door occasionally. Luckily that doesn't happen very often and we've only got two doors. But I think the point you're making, Marcia, is that we find ourselves making space, making our time, just by talking. Communication. We talk so much to each other about what we're up to and things. So there's a lot more sharing going on.
It's also really important that we actually take some time for ourselves. We do live, obviously, in a very small space. And it's really important that if you have any grievances, concerns or worries, that you air them so that they can be discussed and sorted. When you're out on the water, particularly, it's just the two of us most of the time. And we are each other's lifelines, literally. And whilst we might have a few words now and again when we're moored up, we genuinely have never argued whilst we're sailing. And I think that is just sort of survival instinct. Like, if you annoy the other, they might not get you back in the boat if you fell overboard.
What is it you say?
Yeah, I always say that when you're living on a boat, you have to treat your spouse really well, because not only are they going to be the one to get you back on the boat if you fall in, but they actually have to want to first. Kerry,
and with that, and with that sobering thought, good question, Marcia, very good question.
And also, I mean, you were really, really poorly couple of years ago, just before Christmas, in fact. So what I did, I let Kerry take over our cabin, and I made bed in a different part of the boat. We're very lucky. We've got a forepeak, which is the piece at the front of the boat that's a big, big double bed, and also a single in the main cabin. So I just slept in there. And yeah, it just works. But I think the most important thing is any issues, get them out in the open, talk about them, get them sorted, because we're with each other literally pretty much all the time, apart from when one goes off to a shop. I say one, it's usually Kerry.
Yeah, it's a good point about dividing the jobs, blue and pink jobs. There aren't many blue jobs, there aren't many pink jobs, because on a boat you need to muck in and do them all. For some strange reason, I quite enjoy shopping. But anyway, do we have any more questions?
Yep, we do.
Oh, go on then.
So, Stuart, thank you very much, Stuart, said, do you enjoy the challenge of deciding what you need and don't need on board, and how best to store everything?
At the very outset, that we started out getting this underway about 4 years ago when we bought this boat, trading up from our little 26 foot Saddler that we had before. And once we decided that actually we were going to start to spend more and more time on the boat, there is a huge transition, of course, from a house to a boat. I did find it a bit of a struggle downsizing, but actually once you get underway, once you actually make a start of it, it actually isn't as much of a challenge as you might think so. And we still have a locker, we still have a place that we can keep some mementos and bits and pieces in. But in the main, no, wasn't too bad. Once we made a commitment, when we made a start, actually it was okay.
For me, it was leaving a home that I'd brought the children up in and lived in for many years. Emotionally, I found that incredibly hard. But if you want to follow a dream, sometimes there are some things that you have to deal with in order to do that. So for me, getting rid of things, I'm a really sentimental person. I'm not a hoarder, but I'm a sentimental person. So I kept the things that really meant something to me that had been bought by family or friends. But everyday things, tables, chairs, you know, beds, like all the furniture, saucepans, all that, just absolutely not an issue. And also clothes. A lot of my girlfriends I know sort of say, oh my goodness, poor you, you can't keep many clothes on board. But actually I can only wear one set at a time anyway, and I've got quite a small space to keep them. So I really had to choose carefully what I kept, and to sort of keep practical things, things that don't need ironing, things that dry really quickly, things that will keep you warm, things to layer. So that was part of the challenge of leaving the house. With keeping things on board, there were certain things that we brought to the boat that we thought we needed that we ended up taking back off.
True.
And there were things, Kerry, yeah, weren't there, that we, yeah, didn't bring to the boat, and thought, oh my goodness, we do need that. And so we brought. Then the other part of that was how best to store everything.
Yeah, I mean, just before I go on to that, I may just say, I think one of the interesting factors, of course, is not having a car. And actually, that's been quite liberating in many ways, particularly during the recent fuel crisis, where we were actually much more beholden upon public transport. Actually, particularly where we are here, that's not bad at all. And secondly, there's the freedom. And there's actually quite a lot of freedom that goes along with that. So when you say to divesting yourself of things that you own and have, in many ways, it's some of the bigger items that are actually the easiest.
There's sort of different parts. It's really multi-layered question. It's lovely. One of them was, how do we go about storing things? So
really and truly, that was a joint decision we made with the plastic bags, these amazing vacuum bags that you draw all the air out of, because moisture on a boat, as you can imagine, is your enemy. The last thing you want is moisture on the inside. It's okay having plenty on the outside, but on the inside, not so good. So we're very careful to make sure that we keep a dehumidifier running from time to time in certain parts of the boat. Very important to keep things that we don't use very often in these vacuum bags. Very important to let the lockers air behind. And we've also got quite a bit of insulation there behind different parts of the boat as well. These things you learn as you go along. There's no rule book for some of this stuff. You have lots of differing bits of advice, things that work and things that don't work. But in the end, you're protecting your investment, which is your stuff. And to do that, you need to just think about what is likely to happen to it on a boat. Well, it's going to get the vagaries of temperature, warm outside and cold inside, or invariably cold outside and warm inside. And of course, those contrasts of temperature create condensation. And that's what we're fighting to work to make sure doesn't actually come anywhere between that and our stuff.
So also a few things that I was just thinking about, Kerry, when you were answering that question, is there's a few things that we've done. We've got a roll of mesh that we have underneath the cushions on the boat, so that when you're sleeping, you've actually got this sort of mesh that it helps with condensation underneath the mattress. So they work very well. It's a really good idea to keep a low level of books, paper, cardboard, that sort of thing. So Kindles are great for on a boat. But it's learning where to best put things. And if you're going to bury some bits deep in a locker, then, as Kerry was saying, we put them in vacuum bags so that we know they're protected. My sewing machines that I have on board, obviously it's quite a delicate piece of machinery really to have on a boat, because it's not, a marine environment is not a kind one to things like that. So my machines actually go in these vacuum bags as well.
There's actually more storage on a boat than you realise. Behind all the lockers, underneath the seats, up in the forepeak, even at the bottom of our stateroom bed, there's lots of space. We've got a couple of big lockers at the back of the boat. One of them, actually, we can put a three-man kayak, fuel, oars, flippers, a whole range of stuff goes into this little locker. It's like a TARDIS in many ways. So as Carol said, we have to think about things and make sure that things work practically, because you also need to know where things are when you need to get your hands on them.
And actually, right from the beginning, we said that to have something on board really needed for us to decide, do we actually need that on board? Things kind of have to warrant their space on a boat. So there might be some things that you'd like, but you think, oh, that would be so impractical.
What's quite good there is the fact I'm still on board.
I'll say nothing. And the last bit of that was, is there anything that you would like on board that would not be practical to have?
I think in a perfect world, if we had the storage space or we had the area around it, I'd probably quite like to have a dinghy with a solid base to it. I think that's always easy because it's easy to blow up and broke down. So you do get boats with what they call davits, where they actually bring a boat up onto the back of the boat without actually coming on deck. So that's quite a nice luxurious item where you can literally just lower the boat down into the water and away you go. So I think that would be quite good, davit in a boat. Maybe a same with some sort of transportation. So in fact we are, and we have been talking for ages about having some additional transport on board in terms of bikes. You get these fold away bikes now, or these little scooters, you can get electric scooters. But at the moment, Shanks's pony seems to do the job.
It does. I was just thinking, there's a couple of things that I have on board that aren't necessarily really practical. We've got a really large salad bowl. It is a melamine one, so it's not China one, but it's really huge, and Kerry gets really cross trying to fit it in this cupboard, because to get it in the cupboard, you sort of have to tip it upside down, push it behind the saucepans, then tip it sideways, then level it out again to then go at the back. But it's just in the house, I always had one, well, more than one, but had really lovely large bowls to put food in that in. So yeah, that's a bit impractical. And the other thing that's a bit impractical for on board, I have a really beautiful wicker basket that my mum bought me, and it's actually made by Downton Basket Weavers, and it literally sits in the forepeak with a couple of blankets in it and a couple of winter scarves. There we go. It is practical. It's a storage facility.
There we are.
Yeah. So yeah. But that's not really practical.
What did we say about the pumpkin then? Do you think the pumpkin's practical and should be, you know, does it deserve its place on board? Maybe it's made of plastic.
Maybe not. It's just a jolly good job that Kerry has no idea how much sewing equipment I've got. Because if I didn't sew, I think we'd have enough room to have, well, a whole new cabin. Oh, I've just thought of something, Stuart. I know what I would love to have on board, but it wouldn't be practical.
Is he available? Isn't he filming at the moment?
Kerry, behave. And that would be big, fluffy bath towels.
Oh, yes. Oh, I dream of big, fluffy bath
towels.
They
take too long to dry on board. We have cotton ones, like the Turkish hammam towels, because they serve their purpose. They dry your body, but they dry so quickly. To have big bath towels damp would actually just cause more damp through the boat. So that's probably what I'd like on board that's not really practical.
One thing we have got on board is we have got a pair of dance shoes each, so we can go and practice our ballroom dancing. Any more?
Yep, this is the last one.
Well, great session.
This one. Yeah, thank you. Fantastic. Guys. Thank you so much for asking.
And I have to say, I'm just going to say at this moment, before we hit the final question, how brilliant it is that so many people, A, want to follow Adventures on Board, but B, actually want to interact with stuff that we put up. And some of the videos and some of the clips we've done and some of the photographs we've done, we've been overwhelmed by the number of people that wanted to see more and know more about what we're doing.
It's lovely to share, isn't it?
Fantastic.
It really is lovely to share. And Kerry and I genuinely mean this. If anybody was wanting to join us at any stage of our journey, obviously we're not moving until the spring, but we're still here, and come and see us here. But if anybody wants to join us at any point, if we can make that happen, we will. You obviously have to be incredibly flexible with where you come, because obviously we couldn't give a definite as to where we would be. But, you know, if it's something you fancy, give us a shout.
Absolutely. And if you could time it in when we've got the boat out of the water and we've got the anti-foul that needs applying to the hull, just call. You can come here straight away.
So, last question. This is from Jill. So, thank you, Jill.
Thank you, Jill.
How do we dispose of rubbish while we're sailing? And do we have a specific place to store until we reach our next destination?
Thank you, Jill, for the question. Recycling is very important to us. And luckily, we're in a marina which is very good at recycling. So we do separate things out and we do go and use the recycling facilities here. When we're at sea, we do put things into bags, and then we have a big locker actually at the back of the boat where we can actually put what they call gash bags, and we can put them in there until we actually get somewhere we can dispose of our rubbish quite safely. But no, recycling is really high on our list, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really important to us. And also when we go shopping, we don't put vegetables and fruit into separate bags. We just literally put them in the trolley and then put them in our shopping bag to bring back. We use shopping bags again and again. We've got the long life ones. And on board, we just store the vegetables in bags that I've made, cotton bags that some go in the bilges. That's kind of under our floorboards. And some go in the fridge. I also made a whole load of wax wraps. So when we go out on picnics, we wrap our food in those so we don't have rubbish. I'd be lying if I said we didn't have any plastic bags and foil and that sort of thing on board. We do, because sometimes the wax wraps aren't quite right. Sometimes you need to put something into a plastic bag. But we really try hard to recycle. And as Kerry said, when we're going along, we will actually put things to one side to recycle when we get in somewhere. And actually, when we were in the River Orwell, Kerry was so determined to recycle these items that we had. He thought there was a bin ashore, and we went ashore on the dinghy, do you remember? And anyway, it wasn't a bin at all. So we kept on walking. This bag of recycling had the best walk any recycling bag has had. We went all on this beautiful, beautiful walk in Suffolk.
Suffolk.
My sense of direction's appalling. Well, on land it is. And so Kerry just carried this recycling for miles. So that's pretty good.
It was well exercised.
Very proud of
you. Thank you, darling. It was well exercised. So listen, guys, thank you once again to everybody for asking questions today. I hope we've managed to answer some of them and give you an insight into our strange ways. Well, they may seem strange to some, but to us, it's actually perfectly normal.
Yeah, it is. No, as Kerry said, thank you so much for asking the questions. If there's still anything on the back of the questions that we've answered today that you think, yeah, I'd like to ask more about that, please do. And if this session is successful, then we'll do some more.
Will we?
Well,
thanks very much from Kerry.
And from me. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.